ప్రణమాయ సతదేవి ప్రణమామి హరే ప్రియే వాంఛాకల్పతరేభ్యశ్చ కృపాసింధుభ్యేవ చ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీమద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసాది గౌర భక్తవృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే
We'll recite the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Please repeat after me. Want to become free from the threefold miseries of material nature. You all want? Thank you. So here is a formula for you. Nata apaira bibhuyate. He is saying, you want to become completely free from the threefold miseries of this material world, three things you have to do, he says. Guna adhikan muram lipset. You should be very jolly to receive your seniors, senior devotees. Adhikan. If somebody is having a greater advancement in Krishna consciousness than you should welcome them with a smile, which Bijali Prabhupada says. Anakrosham guna adhamat. You should be compassionate to those who are relative in Krishna consciousness. Maitrim samanad anviche. With those who are your equals, you should be friendly. So Prabhupada in the purport writes, but those who are superior to us in Krishna consciousness, we become envious of them. And those who are inferior to us in Krishna consciousness, we ridicule them, mock at them, make fun of them. And those who are equal to us in Krishna consciousness, we try to brag about ourselves to them. So these are the wrong behavior that Prabhupada explains in the purport.
So,
what is the context in which I quoted this sloka today? On the first day, we were discussing on fault-finding habit, fault-finding tendency, and how bad it is, and how fault-finding gradually leads to blasphemy. Then, yesterday we were understanding more about the Vaishnava Parad with many pastimes. Yesterday we were discussing about Rupa Goswami's pastime. And I was also telling two vital points I made. One was that every progressive Krishna conscious devotee experiences a prema vesh in the heart, which arises from unpretentious humility and unduplicitous surrender to Krishna. So for that we need an innocent bhav like a child while approaching Krishna. We have to be completely like a blank slate without any kutinati or duplicitous nature. And that kind of innocence can be preserved, maintained and grown if a devotee is free from aparad. So, in that connection we were telling that the prema wish keeps increasing in spiritual life until we commit some aparad. See, the word aparad can be divided as appa and radha. That which takes us far away from Srimati Radharani. That is called aparad. So, the more we go away from Radharani, that is the hope for us. In fact, Radharani is the only shelter for devotees. In fact, if somebody goes in front of Radha Rasbihari, you go in front of Rasbihari and tell him, I am here, I have come to serve you, Krishna. He will ask you, Kira Ketanidhan, why are you all these years? Suddenly you want to serve me? I don't think you want to really serve me. Get out of here, he will say. But Prabhupada says, you take a flower and put it in the hand of Srimati Radharani and tell her, oh Srimati Radharani, please offer this flower to your beloved Krishna. And then when she offers the flower to Krishna and says, this devotee is a wonderful devotee, then the Sadhguru will call you, come here. That is why Raghunathas Goswami in one prayer says, if I find Krishna standing alone near Govardhan, calling me, come here, I will take Abhartan and run away. I will not go to him, he says. But if I find Krishna standing with Srimati Radharani, even though they may not call me, I will go running towards them, he says. Because I can be confident, as long as Radharani is there, she will give me shelter and hand me over to Krishna. Otherwise there is no hope. So aparadha, that is why aparadha is bad. In fact, sin is on a material platform, aparadha is on a spiritual platform. That's what makes it like a dhuli lep and vajra lep. Dhuli lep is actually like if some dust comes on your shirt, you can just, you can just remove it very easily. Vajra lep means, like a line drawn in a stone. That's like vajra lep. Sometimes they make etching, etching. Sometimes you etch something in a metal. So the Vaishnava is like etched in our system. It takes a long time to, millions of lifetimes to erase it completely. So, then we got, I purposely took the pastime of Rupa Goswami to show, even if one is very, very exalted Vaishnava, of the order of Rupa, still, the offenses can diminish your avesh. So we were discussing about that. And also, Rupa Goswami's example is taken because Lord uses his pure devotees to teach us lessons. Then we were discussing many pastimes like Daksha Prajapati offending Shiva. We discussed Indra offending the Vrajabasis. Probably you might remember, I was making a point about Anugraha and Kshama, the difference between the two. And then we proceeded. Then there were some secrets for appreciating devotees. You can come to the last page now. Of the previous notes, yesterday's, there is day 2. Day 3 has come now, notes has come? Day 3 has come also, yeah. You are going to get the notes for day 3 also. But before we go to day 3, day 2 and last part of the notes we will quickly go through. There is page number 7. It's only Bhakti Tirthaswami Maharaj. After studying Bhagavatam, he summarized all the principles of the Vaishnava philosophy in these 8 statements, 4+4. And they are so beautiful. Any Vaishnava who is an Antarmukha Vaishnava, or internal worker, they will find this very interesting. See, there are 2 types of Vaishnavas, Bahirmukha and Antarmukha Vaishnava. Bahirmukha means superficial Vaishnavas, or you can say circumstantial or whatever. Antarmukha Vaishnava is a substantial Vaishnava. So, what is the Vaishnava with the substance? For example, if quarrel happens, if some fight happens, or if some misunderstanding happens, the Vaishnava doesn't pinpoint immediately others. Like in this world, it is very commonly found that somebody is asking, who did this mistake? Then everyone will look around and ask, who did the mistake? Who did the mistake? Everyone. You seen that? And then somebody is asking, who did this wonderful service? And everyone will say, I did it. You seen that? Yeah. It's very common in this world. So, Vaishnava means just the opposite. When it comes to credit, the Vaishnava takes a back seat and puts the other Vaishnavas in the front. That is the Vaishnava. And wittiness means when it comes to credit, he is on the... Remember yesterday I was selling Pradishthanari Sadakumari, correct? I was selling yesterday. We are talking about that point. Similarly, when there is a misunderstanding or fault, a Vaishnava just doesn't blame others without thinking about what mistake I could have done. I could have contributed in this issue. Antarmukha Vaishnava means one of the things, maybe my chanting is not good these days. Maybe my hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam is not very attentive. Or maybe my practical application of Vaishnava philosophy is not proper. Like that one thinks. What can I do in order to rectify the situation? That is Vaishnava. Vaishnava doesn't simply pass the buck to others. He is not in an ABC mode. You know ABC mode? Accusing, blaming and criticizing mode. Or he is not in a BMW mode. You know, that also is the same. Blaming, mourning, wailing mode. So, Vaishnava doesn't get into these traps. Vaishnava always thinks, okay, whatever has happened has happened. What can I do to contribute to resolving this issue? Because after all, that Vaishnava is also a nice devotee. I am also a devotee. I am trying to become a devotee. Instead of quarreling with the devotee, how can the problem be solved? He doesn't label a person as a bad person or whatever. So, this is the meaning of Antarmukha Shishya. So, there are many things that Vaidehi Maharaj mentions about Antarmukha Bahirmukha Shishya. I am not going to go into that, it will take a long time. But we will try to understand some of this. The four principles of community building. First he says, treat everyone you encounter as if the success or failure of your spiritual life depends on the quality of your interactions with them. Example, Prithu versus Indra. I'll explain the meaning of the statement. Treat everyone you encounter, which means the devotees generally, and it can also be extended to non-devotees. I'll tell you how. As if the success or failure of your spiritual life depends on the quality of your interactions with them. I will begin with a material example, so it'll be easy for you. Then you can go to a spiritual example. Say, father wants to teach a child the value of sharing and enjoying. So one day he is seeing his child in the playing with the five, six toys. And the neighbor's child comes. And then he says, please, can you please give me one toy? And the father is telling, looking at the child and watching, what is the boy doing? And the boy is keeping all the toys to himself and says, no, I won't give you. And the father now wants to instruct the child. He says, beta, please, give at least one toy. And the child says, no, I won't give, he says. And the father says, you see, you should share and enjoy. You should not enjoy alone. And the child says, no, I don't want to share, he says. Then the father takes a lollipop and says, see, if you give a toy to that other boy, I'll give you a lollipop. Child says, I don't want a lollipop, I want only the toys, he says. Then the father says, see, if you don't give the toy to the other child, I will slap you, he says. Then the child says, okay, you slap me, still I won't give, he says. And he says, not only I'll slap you, I'll give you a slap also and snatch one of your toys and give it to the other fellow, he says. And the child says, no, I will not let you give. Let me see how you will take it from me. And then the father comes, he gives a slap and snatches one of the toys and gives it to the other boy. Well, this boy, he's crying. Have you seen the children? Sometimes they cry very big and then they, and then again they go back. And he waves his hands and legs. And he's lying on the ground as if the universe has come to an end or something. Another child is very happy that somehow I got a toy also. So now all of you think for a moment, is it a good quality of interaction between father and child? No. Now what could the father have alternatively done in this situation? We can ask how many of your children, any of you have children, you can say, how could If any of you have children, you have the right to answer this question now. What would you do if your son was in this situation? If fathers can't answer, then you'll ask the mothers. Fathers have become too thoughtful now, I think. Yeah, anybody? No hand from the father's side. From mother's side, anybody? Anybody wants to try? Yeah. Anybody wants to give a try? Yes, Mataji? Okay, So you told him that, sure, I'll get you more toys, but still if he's not giving, what you would do? That's a good idea. So you can put some distraction so that he goes for that and then he can take one of the toys and give to the other child. That's a good idea, yeah. But if the child wants to make sure that you don't give any toy to the other child, it's likely also. That's a good idea. Yeah. So the answer for this question is that you can... your answer? The answer is that we don't have to teach the child values on the spot. We can teach the values at a later time. So for example, okay, the child is not giving the toy, then you can say, okay, keep all the toys with yourself, no problem. Be happy. Then you take the other child, pick him up and take him to the kitchen and give him some sweet or something. So the other child goes back to his home, accepts the sweets and goes back. Then, later on when your child grows, he is in a happy mood one day, he is in a smiling mood and you have given some nice thing and he is happy. Then in the right mood, at that time we can teach the value. We can say that, you see, we should always share and enjoy. We should share with others, we should not try to enjoy ourselves. And child may be in a more receptive mood at that time. Now, why should we not teach this value on the spot? There is only one reason for that. We have to ask a question to ourselves. Do I value my relationship with my child more? Or do I want to prove my authority over my child? So we have to ask this question to ourselves. Sometimes parents may be afraid that, you know, if we allow the child to go his way, then over a period of time he'll become too adamant and too uncontrollable. But actually there is a time for strictness also with a child. Actually the method of raising a child is that you give abundant love so that the child depends on you completely, and then you will be able to correct the child also. Similarly, in our relationship also with devotees, if we want to instruct them, while dealing with devotees, unless we have invested in them, we have no right to instruct them. Like you see, have you seen how they make these aluminium pots? While hitting the aluminium pots with a hammer, they also keep a hand inside. So the hand represents the support that you are giving. And then you can also hit when they are giving the hit. Without putting the hand to hit it, the hammer will go inside. Isn't it? You have to hold it inside. Similarly, without having invested in relationships, we cannot correct. Like one devotee was asking me, Prabhuji, I tried to correct a devotee who was sleeping and chanting. I tried to wake him up. Immediately he bursted. Immediately he blurted out. He became overpowered by anger. He said, who are you to correct me? Then I told this devotee, actually you don't have any relationship with the devotee. Prabhupada says one should not correct those who are not one's friends and disciples. You should not instruct. You have no right to instruct anybody who is not your son or disciple, Prabhupada says. You only can instruct those who are your sons or disciples. Now what's the meaning of son or disciple? Son or disciple is somebody who has developed love and trust in you. Then you can instruct them. Then it would make some sense. Similarly, while dealing with devotees also, like I told you between father and child now, all of you think for a moment, the dealing between husband and wife, or dealing between one devotee and another devotee, the relationships sometimes can become very strained. It can become very strained because of, it's called a rough dealing. Rough dealing. Rough dealing means in a kind of materialistic mode. In material world, people do it all the time. It's no wonder. In material world, who cares? People only care for money. Modern day, the slogan is, trust no one and love money. That is the modern day love and trust. If you see. But devotees means, you know, you trust the devotees, you love the devotees. Sometimes when we have a misunderstanding with the devotee, we are very keen to sort it out. Why? Because we value the relationship. That's why here he is saying, if you see this statement again, treat everyone you encounter as if the success or failure of your spiritual life depends on the quality of your interaction with them. Which means, success in my spiritual life is if I have established a sweet relationship with my superiors, with my equals, with my juniors. Then my spiritual life is considered to be successful. And if I have a strained relationship with my spiritual master, or with my seniors, or with my equals, or with my juniors, then my spiritual life is considered a failure. One should consider like that, if you really want to advance in spiritual life fastly. Now, one devotee was asking me, Prabhuji, you know, we are not living in the temple, you know, we are householders, you know, we live at home, and our interaction with devotees is very less. Vacation we meet them. So, most often, you know, there is not much question of offending the devotees because, you know, we have a nice relation because we rarely meet. So, we are bowing down, we are respectful and everything. So, then it seems that this topic is not so relevant to us. So, in connection to this, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, your swanishta, there is a swanishta, parinishta and nirapeksha, three types of devotees. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in the Chaitanya Shikshamritam. So he says, who is a Swanishta Bhakta? He says, you can repeat this verse. Dharma Swanishta Tattvam Sam Vishwaksena Katasaya Mata Dhyaya Yadiratim Shrana Yaga Hikevalam. This verse says that dharma sa anushtita pumsa, a human being who has accepted a swadharma and who is performing it, if his swadharma does not lead him to rati for Krishna, rati means love for Krishna, then he says that is only shamayevahi kevalam. What is shamayevahi kevalam? Actually, when we say it is waste of time, but actual meaning of shama is hard labor, which is little more than waste of time. For example, sitting idly is waste of time. But taking an empty husk and beating it for 2 hours, is it only waste of time? It's a waste of time plus energy also. Waste of time and energy. Shrama evahi kevala. So, which means, you know, the literal meaning of this verse is, say, a person who is practicing Krishna consciousness, and he's doing a swadharma. Say you're working for a company. You're working for a bank. Or somebody is a housewife. You do your occupational duty. That occupational duty should lead you to love for Krishna. Do you see any connection in this? You wonder, what is the connection? My occupational duty is almost apparently material. And Krishna consciousness is spiritual. So most people think Krishna consciousness and occupational duty are mutually exclusive. They think like that. You know what is mutually exclusive? Separate. There is no connection at all. It's like two disjoint sets. Set A, set B. There is no connection. They think like that. Morning I am a devotee, in the daytime I am almost like Karmi with everybody else. They think like that. They are not able to see any overlapping point. But what Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains here, Swanishtita Bhakta means one who makes his occupational duty a subset of devotional service. It's like there is no board here. The board there, yeah. Just Krishna. She has shown three different drawings. The first drawing shows somebody who is doing his occupational duty and he cannot see any connection to Krishna consciousness. He sees it like a separate set completely. And second one we have shown, a person who is so Krishna conscious that occupational duty becomes a subset. He is called a Sanishta Bhakta. We will see what is a Sanishta Bhakta. The second case is a Sanishta Bhakta. And the third case you see here, the person's occupational duty occupies his mind and heart so much that he considers Krishna consciousness to be a small part of his duty. Now, what are the differences between these three? If I give an example, it will be more easy. Like, for example, in the morning, you get up in the morning, you do your chanting 16 rounds of Hare Krishna, you reach Srimad Bhagavatam, little bit, half an hour or something. And then you go to your company or job or anything, and then you start your occupational duty. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that after performing spiritual life in the morning and surcharging yourself, you should enter into your occupational duty with the desire to get Krishna conscious realizations. And you should desire to get Krishna's reciprocation while performing your duty. How? We'll see a practical example. Ambarish Maharaj rises early in the morning. Savayimana Krishna Padaravindi. Oh, correct? You all know that. Vachamsi Vaikunta Gunanu Varnane Karo Harer Mandira Marjanadishu. He is cleaning the temple. He is taking darshan of the deity of Krishna. He is worshipping the Lord. He is singing the holy names. He is hearing Krishna Katha, everything. And then now, after finishing all the morning duties, now he is going to start his kingly duties. But as soon as he begins the day, Durasamani lands there. And as Durasamani comes, you know, and Durasamani poses a situation in the life of Ambarish. How? By plucking out a hair and throwing it on the ground and creating a big demon. And Ambarish Maharaj considers himself as Krishna's devotee at that time. And he thinks that being Krishna's devotee, I am always protected by Krishna. And I don't have to, you know, even pray to Krishna that he protect me. And also he considers Durasamuni to be a respectable guest at home, uninvited guest, but yet a guest, you know. The word Atithi means one who comes without information. Tithi means date, Atithi means comes on any date, you know. So, he thinks that I am Krishna's devotee and Krishna is protecting me. If Krishna wants to kill me, he can kill me. If Krishna wants to save me, he will save me. But then I should treat a guest as warmly as possible. So he is keeping his Krishna consciousness. Which means, his morning program of Krishna consciousness is so surcharging that it makes his occupational duty a subset of his Krishna consciousness. Like the second case. That means it permeates his entire day. Like in Pune, we have one gentleman working with Whirlpool as a manager. So this fellow will come to a temple in the morning, chant with devotees, Mangalati, everything will attend, and then, you know, he is also very pakka in his duty to wife and children. It's very amazing. You know, he will go home, he will purchase things from the market, he will teach something to his daughter and everything. Then again come to temple, see some departmental activities, and then he will go to the company. In company he got even an award also for being the best manager and everything. And while being in the company, the morning half is very busy for him till 1 o'clock. Guiding many people. And after 1 he has his free time. And for 2 hours he'll make phone calls. All Krishna conscious phone calls. To all the other people, calling them for program and doing this, doing that. He's sitting in a company, but his whole heart is in the temple only. And devotees. And again evening he'll come at about 5:36, again the temple, you know, helping in assisting preaching. Which means, you know, he has given his heart to Krishna. But he is wearing pants, shirt, coat, suit and everything, just for the sake of performing his an occupational duty, like that. So, Ambarish Maharaj was also in that category. He was first Krishna's devotee, and he was also performing occupational duty. That is called Svanishta Bhakta. So, Svanishta Bhakta subordinates occupational duty to Krishna consciousness. Whereas, the other person I was telling you, the third category fellow, he subordinates Krishna consciousness to his occupational duty. What is the meaning of that? Morning you are sitting to chant Hare Krishna and the mobile is ringing. Then immediately he takes the mobile call and says, oh, my boss is calling now. and then he's talking to boss, then he's keeping it on, another call comes. So sometimes in between the rounds also many phone calls come, and he keeps attending. So the chanting is not done so well, isn't it? Or sometimes, you know, he is having so many worries about the company, I have to do this thing, I have to do that thing. Which means occupational duty, you know, it percolates into his Krishna consciousness. Which means his Krishna consciousness becomes subordinate to his occupational duty. Whereas in the first case, occupational duty is subordinate to Krishna consciousness because Krishna percolates into his occupational duty. When Krishna is dominating our head so much, that even while wearing pant shirt, I'm thinking I'm a Vaishnava, chanting and dancing, like that. That is actually the Sarishta Bhakta. And the third category, the first category you see, that fellow, he cannot see any connection only. He cannot see any connection. He thinks when I go to temple, I will wear tilak and I will chant, dance. And when I am outside the temple, when I am going to company, I will go for party, I will go for movie, I will go for playing cards. He will do, so he's like a chameleon. You know chameleon? Chameleon changes colors. When it is on tree, it becomes brown. When it is on grass, it becomes green. Isn't it? Similarly, people change their, you know, colors according to the place where they are in. That person is like that. He can't be much considered a devotee at all. That's double standard. So, out of these three categories, in which category we should aim at? The second one. Which means, now taking the same example for a mother. Say a mother has a child. She has to raise a child. You know, once Urmila Mataji came, she was telling, when we ask devotees how many books they distributed. But we should ask people, we should also ask how many diapers a mother changed for her child. We should give some special prize for them also. She was telling. Because the mother knows how difficult it is to raise a child. So Prabhupada told one lady, you are taking care of your child is also devotional service, Prabhupada said. Because if you, like I remember one mother in Pune, she had two daughters. And those daughters were very brilliant, they were getting good rank in the school. But she used to become so busy in our temple services, she would come in the morning like 7 o'clock or so, and she would stay practically till 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock, you know, making garland and, you know, chanting and meeting devotees and everything. So because of that, she neglected her two daughters. And the two daughters gradually started getting into materialistic association, and getting spoiled. And they started wearing jeans and t-shirt and going to movies and parties, and they were getting spoiled. At one time she started crying. She went to her spiritual master with the two daughters and begging him, please kindly instruct them properly. Then Maharaj told her, I will first instruct you and then I can instruct them. Then she put them outside and the family came to meet Maharaj. Husband and Maharaj told them, you have done a great mistake in your life. You know, in the name of your Krishna consciousness, you have neglected your children. Because children cannot be molded in the way you want without giving them time and energy. Your love should be, the time you invest in them is proportional to your love. If somebody says, I can give you money anybody can give. The time is very precious for everyone. The Maharaj told her that, now you stay at home, you only come to temple once in a week, or maybe twice in a week. But you should put attention on your daughters, and you practice devotional service at home, let them watch you. And then after seeing you, they will also grow in devotional service. Like that he told. And then of course she started, now her daughters have become blissful devotees now. Wearing tilak and kantimala and, you know, wearing sari, and now they are serving in the children preaching department very actively. But they saw another example and they became wonderful devotees. So, for a mother having children, that is her occupational duty. Now such a mother, for example, you know, she may rise in the morning, she will be praying to Krishna that let my husband and child don't wake up, you know, till I complete my rounds, you know. Because if these fellows get up, then my chanting will be interfered. They will ask, where is this, where is that, so many things. So sometimes she tries to get up very early, which means she is very sincere. She is putting her Krishna consciousness over her occupational duty, which means she doesn't neglect her occupational duty. At the same time, she tries to sincerely perform her Krishna consciousness as perfectly as possible. Now, there is a possibility of a mother, you know, who gets up at 6 o'clock along with the husband and child and everyone. And she is cooking, cleaning, washing, and then the whole chores of the day ends by about 11:30. Huh? At 11:30 she wants to chant, now she is feeling very tired. Huh? Every mother needs at least half an hour rest, if she is even a housewife, half an hour, 1 hour. And then she takes some rest. Huh? And then 12 o'clock she is thinking, no, let me now chant now. The child comes from the school back, finished. Huh? The child has come back, your chanting is also finished. Hmm? You can't chant well. Now imagine having a tender child who is just going to LKG or UKG. And having a child at home and chanting, is it possible? The child will come and sit on your lap. No? It's very difficult. No? One cannot perform properly. So, yeah, so there was an article in the Back to Godhead, Vimla Mataji writes, that even while caring for children, a mother can experience desperate feelings for Krishna, she says. She says, even while caring for a child, so mother can keep desires that I want to see my child becoming very Krishna conscious. Let me teach my child. B for Balram, K for Krishna. She can teach also. Similarly, she also, intelligently, if she is planning, when the child is asleep, I will nicely chant my rounds. That means she is also Svanishtha Bhakta. That means she wants to perform her Krishna consciousness as perfectly as possible. Like she is in the kitchen now. She puts on her guru's lectures. She is hearing some Hare Krishna Kirtan. Which means she is endeavoring to keep herself very Krishna conscious even while performing the occupational duties. Then we become Svanishtha Bhaktas. So this verse will recite again. Dharma Svanishtha Bhaktasam Vishvaksena Kapasamaha Nyatadanyatyadhatim Shramayavahikaram. So what this verse says? Dharma Svanishtha Pramsam Vishvaksena Kapasamaha. So if one is doing a Svanishtha Bhakti, the proof is his or her taste for hearing about Krishna will increase. That is the test. Kathasya. Vishvaksena Katha means Krishna Katha. So here's my taste for, see there's a difference between hearing and taste for hearing. That's the difference. Sometimes we'll be there in a particular place due to social pressure. Like, you know, your team leader is calling you that there's a Patruksha program, please come for the program. And you know for sure this fellow is going to make a phone call. Every week this fellow makes call. And then you say, oh, I'm coming Prabhuji, I'm coming Mataji, surely. And I'm there, you know. And then you go in the evening there, but your mind is very tired, body is tired, your week has been so tight. Then when you go for a program, due to some peer pressure or social pressure, sometimes you may go. And you may hear the lecture also. That is not same as a person who is longing to hear. Longing to hear is different. Like, you know, you are sitting in a train, you are going for a Patruksha program, and somehow, you know, something happened, the train is stopping for half an hour. And you're literally crying, oh, this time 8 o'clock class must have started already. And you're coming out of the train, you're restlessly thinking, you know, when will the train move? And then you find that the whole time is gone. And then you make a phone call to your leader and say that, you know, I couldn't come for the class, I am so sorry. Please tell me what happened in the class. What was discussed this week? Can you please send me an email of the main points? That means we have eagerness to hear. That has to be developed. That's why hearing is different from eagerness to hear. So when will the eagerness to hear will come? When we are in that second category of a Svanishtha Bhakta. When we subordinate our occupational duty to Krishna consciousness by that. So now, if we are Svanishtha Bhaktas, then we can understand the value of Vaishnava relationship. We can understand. Like Ambarish Maharaj understood, he is a great sage, Durvasa. And he thought, I am a grihastha, I am a king, and my duty is to respect him. Even if he commits a blunder, I should not commit a bigger blunder. It's better for me to be submissive. Because, you know, Krishna is watching, you know, the whole episode, what is happening. And the Lord's eyes are always watching. Unblinking eyes. Chakshur yasya narishyati. Bhagavatam says, the Lord has unblinking eyes, which watches us at every moment. And he watches everyone and everything, everywhere, simultaneously. He is doing that. So, Ambarish is thinking, you know, whatever is happening under Krishna's sanction only. So I will always respect my guest. I will not mistreat my guest. I will not even retaliate against him. He thinks like that. Very high class consciousness of Ambarish Maharaj. So, because Ambarish Maharaj doesn't want to lose his relationship with Vyasamuni, he feels that, you know, the sage should continue to come to my place and honor Prasad. And I don't want to become his enemy. Like, Vyasamuni Maharaj is called Ajata Shatru. You know? Ajata Shatru means one who had no enemies at all. Like that. So in our interaction with devotees, sometimes there is a possibility of some unpleasantness in our mutual dealings. Can somebody give an example of an unpleasant interaction between two devotees? It may not be necessarily from your life, don't worry. It can be from some other incident that you know of. But two devotees, do you remember I told an example of a pleasant interaction between Jananivas Prabhu Krishna and Prabhu, I told you, correct? Can you give an example of an unpleasant relationship which leads to some strain in relationship between two devotees? Can you give an example? I have an example, but I wanted to hear from some of you. Yeah? Yes? He is saying sometimes you become familiar with devotees. Adiparichaya, avajnap. Familiarity breeds contempt. Because we're being too familiar sometimes, like for example, it's a rainy day, the devotee has kept his umbrella, and then he's sleeping now, you know. So, you are thinking that I'll just go to the market, buy something and come. So you take his umbrella and go. And then that's what he's saying, it's heavily raining, he wants to go out, and he cannot go out. Then you have taken his umbrella, you know. And then he comes back, you know, he's waiting for you. Now he's losing the time now, because he's supposed to go out now. And he doesn't know what to do. So no other way. He's waiting, and then after an hour or couple of hours you come back and you say, Prabhuji, you know. And then he's asking, hey, how did you take my umbrella without telling me? Prabhuji, it was just lying here. You know? And after you are my friend, I thought you won't be angry with me, you know. I took his eyes. So he becomes very upset with you. Sometimes we take advantage of our friendship. Like people use your computer and the computer breaks down. You know? People use your bicycle or bike, and it gets punctured or something. They silently keep it and go away. Later on, you find out. Yeah, sometimes yesterday when Mataji had asked a question about what if devotees exploit us, and I feel it's a very unfortunate situation. If a devotee tries to exploit you, it's very unfortunate. It's a very painful situation. Sometimes a devotee will ask you for money. Can you please give me 2,000 rupees or 5,000 rupees? You may give. And then they tell you that I'll give you back in a couple of months, and they don't give you back. After 4 months, you slightly indicate, indirectly, but they pretend as if they don't understand you. Sometimes after 6 months, after 1 year, they don't give. And then your heart really burns. You think, you know, how can I have Vaishnava behave like this? It becomes very bad. So, even in devotees doing business together, it's always best that the dealings are done like what karmis do. Put a revenue stamp, signature, promissory note, whatever it takes. Even while dealing with devotees. We should not assume that this fellow is wearing tilak and kattimala, so I can trust this fellow. Many people wear tilak and kattimala for that purpose only. For earning the trust. Those who borrow from others. And it can lead to a very unpleasant interaction. Literally unpleasant interaction. Yeah. Anybody else has an example of unpleasant interaction? Yes. Actually, Gopinath Prabhu gave many good examples in the last 2 days. I want to give chance to those who haven't spoken. You haven't spoken, no? Yeah, please. Hey, these two fellows have given many examples. I would like to hear from others also, yeah? Yeah, correct. Sometimes you are not trusting a devotee, he says. And then you reveal your mind in confidence to them, thinking that they will give me shelter and support, you know, some encouragement and offer me some solution. But then on the contrary, they ridicule you or laugh at you. And that is very threatening to you. You get shocked. That's true. Then the relationship becomes very, you know, irritable or unpleasant relationship. Very good. Thank you. Anybody else's example? Anyone else? Nice example. He's saying, if somebody is given a service and then they nod their head and say that I will do it, but they become lazy, they don't do it, then the person who gave the service, you know, he loses hope and trust. This one is not trustworthy. Next time I will not give any service to this person. Then the relationship becomes a bit strained. Yeah. That's true, yeah. Thank you. That's also a nice example. Any other example anyone else has? Yeah?
Competition for Krishna service.
There can be competition in Krishna service. Now it reminds me of an interesting example. One time, one Guruji had come to one ISKCON temple and one Mataji came crying to him. Maharaj, Maharaj, you know, this Mataji is not allowing me to cook in the kitchen, you know. She cried. And then Maharaj saw her weeping tears practically and loudly shouting. And then Maharaj asked, who is not allowing you to cook? Then the same Mataji came out and said, Maharaj, last 8 years I am cooking for you and I know your diet exactly. And I just told this Mataji, if you want to cook for Maharaj, you can assist me. You know. But she said, no, I don't want to assist you, you quit the kitchen. I will cook, she said. But I told Maharaj that, you know, you don't know what Maharaj likes and all, so if you don't want me to cook, then better you don't cook, I told her. And now she is weeping and crying. Then this Maharaj asked this other lady, he said, if you simply assist your senior Mataji in cooking, I will be far more happier than you, than making a scene like this, in front of all the devotees. And then he told her, you know, go and learn to, he said, try to become servant of the servants. The meaning of servant or servant. You know, he said, and then Maharaj asked her, then why are you, you know, why do you want me to cook for me? You know, Maharaj asked her. You know, and then he openly told her that if you want to cook for my pleasure, I will be more happy if you assist that lady. But if you want to satisfy your false ego, then you can do tandav like Bhadrakali. No? No. So, you can see that. You understand? Now, sometimes people create a scene like that, you know, strained relationships. Yeah. Because of some service, competition in service, it can cause. Yeah. Like sometimes in book distribution, you know, one team gets a certain score. You know, they have distributed 10,000 books till now. Another team is getting 12,000 books. Sometimes there is a feverish competition. Who is going to distribute more? Sometimes there are two congregation teams which are very powerful. Everyone knows Krishna and Balaram team. Both the teams, you know. Both the teams, one day this team is up, another day other team is up. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes there is a big competition between them. Actually, did I tell you yesterday? What is the meaning of healthy competition? Healthy competition means I want to do more than you in order to inspire you to do more than me. And I know very well that you will do more than me, not to defeat me, but to inspire me to do more than you. Even if whether you do more or I do more, ultimately mission of Prabhupada flourishes. That is the goal of both of us. This is healthy competition. Now, who can repeat this statement? Anybody? So repeat it, I can be confident that you understood it. You both know. Yeah, anybody? Who would like to try to repeat it? Anybody? There's one hand up there, yeah. Yeah? You would like to say? Yeah, yeah? Yeah, you are ready? Yeah, the one. Yeah?
I want to do more than you, so that it can inspire you to do more than me.
Correct.
I know that you want to do more than me, so that you can inspire me, so that I can do more than you.
Yeah, correct. And then second part we can say. Anyone else after that I told, what I told you? Here. That means both of them have service attitude, isn't it? The right attitude, yeah.
And even if you do more than me, I know that you have done to inspire me.
Correct, that is true, yeah.
The second part was that.
That also, you also said that.
The first is that if I do more than
okay, that is first part, and what is the second part, and then there is third part also. Yeah, there is a hand, a voice message loudly. Very good. Yeah, that is the third point. Very correct. Ultimately, mission expands, Prabhupada's mission. That is our goal. It's a common goal, you know. So, you are not my enemy, I am not your enemy, we both are friends, and just like, for example, we are Pandavas, and Maya side is like Kauravas. Now, should we shoot at Kaurava side or should we shoot each other? Can you imagine? If, see, for example, you are a Maharati, I am a Maharati. Suddenly, you do better than me, then I shoot you only. Same side, isn't it? So, actually, if you understand this principle, you will never want to fight with devotees at all. If this can sink in our hearts, never fight with devotees. So, we can apply this principle of Sarishita Bhakti for anybody in this world. Actually, the 24 hours awareness of Krishna will come by Sarishita Bhakti only. If you are doing Sarishita Bhakti, like he says, then one day we will gradually become Parinishita. Sarishita, Parinishita, Nirapeksha. What is Parinishita? The Parinishita person has become totally surrendered to Guru. And such a person can do, for example, you tell such a person, you come in dhoti kurta or you come in sari, they will come in dhoti kurta sari. You tell them, you wear coats, you tie, you dress in a different way and come, for this occasion it will be better, then they will wear like that. You tell the person, if you do PhD in IIT, it will be good, because that will help in preaching, so they will do PhD in IIT. Personally, that fellow is not very keen to get a degree from IIT or something, PhD, doing PhD there. But the Guru says, okay, you do PhD in IIT, that will be helpful in preaching, so he will accept. And Guru says, like there was one Hari Leela Prabhu, is a disciple of Rampart Maharaj, in BRC, he was working. He was not just any ordinary scientist there. He was one of the top scientists who got an award, international award and all he got. And he and his good wife, both of them are first class devotees. At one time their guru told them that, they were starting some gurukula for a homeschooling they were doing for about, 8 or 10 children. So they were asking the family, can you give up your job and come to Sambars in South India and take care of this homeschooling children? They never had a second thought. Immediately they were ready to take off on the job, and now he is training homeschooling 8 or 10 children somewhere in Vizag or somewhere. They are under Krishna's friend Prabhu, who is my very close friend. So they are doing that. So I was very surprised when I heard that. That somebody was, which means the Parameshwara Bhakti means their priority for Krishna consciousness is so great that, they can do anything for Krishna. They are willing to surrender to Guru completely like that. And Nirapeksha Bhakti means like Madhava Nirapuri. They are ayachaka vritti. They don't even beg also. Nirapeksha means they have absolutely no expectations from anybody. They are completely, we don't even have to think of that stage. We only have to worry about the first two stages. Swanishthita and Parinishthita. Especially Swanishthita is very relevant for people who are working in the world, along with their Krishna consciousness together. Now, your interaction with devotees, sometimes there is an interpersonal clash. And when there is a clash, I'll give you an example. Then examples make things more easier. So, for example, you are a superior and you are a subordinate. And the superior is not a very intelligent man. His idea will bring, say, 80% success. And the subordinate has an idea which will bring 100% success. And the subordinate is trying to explain to the superior, please try to understand Prabhu, so much money will be saved, so much energy will be saved, it will be 100% successful, and your idea has some problem, you will be 80% successful. And the superior doesn't seem to understand, somehow. And the subordinate is trying to drive home his point. And in the course of doing that, what happens, the relationship gets strained. And this can happen, like you are celebrating Janmashtami here. There are so many departments, so many services. In every department, there are less efficient people, more efficient people. Imagine if the boss is less efficient and subordinate is more efficient. And the subordinate wants to prove that I can do something better than you. In the course of that, what happens? Can you say? No? Conflict will come. Yeah. What else happens? Yeah? Service gets affected. Yeah. Because both the parties will try to prove his moral point. My opinion is the best opinion. Correct, no? Now the superior has the power to sanction the money. So, do you think you should sanction the money for that subordinate who has a 100% good idea? So, he would say, you have the idea and I have the money. Let us say who wins. You know? Isn't it? So then what should the subordinate do? What do you think should be done? What all things happen? One thing is the conflict that happens. What else happens?
Bitterness.
Bitterness, yeah. So what is the result of that bitterness? Yeah. Strained relationship. I'm looking for something more. Yeah? Upright may happen. Because subordinate may go around telling everyone, my boss is a muff, you know. Yeah. This one, I'm telling him, he doesn't understand. I have such an ego that he is my senior, you know. He is not allowing me. I have such a nice idea. He doesn't allow me to implement. You know? He may go around saying like that. Isn't it? What else happens? Okay, heart becomes hard. What else? It will affect the service also, yeah. Service gets affected. Yeah. And what about both of them? Can they respect each other properly? Now what is going on in the superior's mind? What is going on? Superior is thinking, hey, I brought this fellow to Krishna consciousness. And now, just like a child sometimes kicks the mother or father on the chest. You see that sometimes children do? Or they beat up the mother or father on the face or chest like that. I brought this fellow to Krishna consciousness, now he is kicking me only. He is saying that he has a better idea than me. I think these days he has become overpowered by ahankar. Right? Like that the superior is thinking. And what the subordinate is thinking? He is thinking, I think this Prabhuji doesn't want to encourage me because he is afraid that I will usurp his position. Or I will become more famous devotee than him. Or everyone will say that, you know, my ideas are better than his ideas. So I think he is trying to suppress my talent. Correct, no? So these kind of thoughts, will they be able to have the same respect what they had before? It won't be possible. It's very difficult. So in the workshop, what could be done then? What should they do then? See, sometimes, if relationships are more important than money also, we can lose a little bit of money for preserving the relationship. So in this case, for example, my boss idea is 80% right and mine is 100% right. Allow him to go on. Just cooperate with him and earn his trust. Tomorrow if you earn his trust, you will see in this world, if someone has earned that trust, you know, the superior will completely hand over the keychain to him. Just like you see, a father trusts his son. And the father is giving 500 rupees every day, pocket money. The boy is a very good boy, obedient child. Then tomorrow the father may give the bureau chabi. Bureau key. Later on the boy grows up, he may write out the whole account in his name. Eventually. And why does he do that? Because of trust. You earn the trust. If you don't earn the trust, then imagine if a boy is disobedient to father, is rebellious, he is always counter-arguing, then the father may not even give the father his pocket money. And the boy is smoking or whatever. So the freedom or the freedom is increased by trust, based on trust. So in relationship between devotees, like I asked a question in one class, that the husband, you know, the husband is saying, the wife is saying, we'll go to Mayapur for our, you know, summer vacation. And the husband is saying, we'll go to a European tour. You know, he is saying. So I asked this question in a congregation program. So, what should the wife do? She wants to go to Mayapur, she expressed. But the husband says he'll go for a European tour. And they're very wealthy, well-to-do family. So what should the wife do? Many answers came. Many of the wives, they were telling that, you know, I will take my husband to my spiritual master and make my guru tell him that Mayapur is best, you know. Somebody was telling, you know. Yeah. You know. He's saying that in Europe she can go to Radha Desh, Belgium. Anyway, if the wife goes with the husband for a European tour, she will be able to convince him eventually to come to Mayapur next year. So, actually, the wife has to preserve the relationship. Like, there was one Mataji, you know, whose husband was a non-devotee. And she used to hold a program in her house every week, Wednesday evening. Some 150, 200 people would come, you know. One very senior devotee used to come and give the class. And she used to serve them prasadam. She had a very big one, full room turned into an altar room. And devotees would come to worship and all that. And one day she came to her spiritual master and said, Maharaj, I am so unhappy with my husband. You know, I am fed up, you know, that he is not becoming a devotee and non-cooperative in devotional service, you know. So she was very unhappy and feeling very bitter. And then her guru told her that, you know, he asked her, does he beat you? She said, no, what if he got beating? He never beats me. And does he stop your devotional service? She said, no. Then he asked her, you know, does he not give you enough money for your devotional activities? Oh, he gives whatever I ask. And then what is your complaint? She said, he's not becoming a devotee. That's not a big problem, he said. He has a woman, you need protection, and he's offering you that protection. And he's offering you shelter for your devotional service. And he allows you so much freedom to bring so many people to your house and conduct the program and everything. You know, you should be very happy. And then if you continue to be submissive and cooperative, someday he'll become a devotee. He was telling. So Maharaj was teaching that lady that divorce is not the solution. Just because the other party is not becoming a devotee. So you can see Krishna consciousness is so much relevant to our practical life. You can see. When I gave you all these examples, don't think Krishna consciousness and your everyday life are mutually exclusive or they are separate. There is a direct connection between the two. If you are in good touch with Krishna through the morning chanting and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, our behavior, our speech, our conduct during the day will be dictated by the intensity of our sadhana in the morning. How many of you experience that one day your sadhana in the morning was spaced out and your entire day went very badly? You experience? So you have experience, which means our sadhana has a connection to our day. And morning, if our chanting was blissful, and our reading was good, and your mind is vibrating with spiritual knowledge, spiritual wisdom, then when you go for doing your day-to-day activity, you will see that, you know, you want to speak something about Krishna to somebody, you know, you will want to bring somebody close to Krishna consciousness. You will see that. So our occupation duty becomes influenced by our Krishna conscious vigor, by that. And that is the ideal situation. So, this is the first point. You should think that I should very delicately maintain my relation with all my Vaishnava friends, with my superiors, with my equals, with my juniors and everyone. That's very, very important. Otherwise, like for example, sometimes, you know, most of the time, not sometimes, our quarrel is only with those whom we love very much. Because when we love somebody, our expectation from them increases more and more. And then when they are falling short, then we demand more surrender from them. You will see like that. Like Prabhupada had many intimate disciples. There was one disciple called Rai Ram. And Prabhupada one day was reprimanding him, saying that, see, you know, last Bhaktivedanta magazine you had a picture of Krishna which is not so beautiful. You should have put a beautiful picture of Krishna. You should put it in such a way that people will be attracted to Krishna. And then I told you not to use advertisements in Back to Godhead, but you have used advertisements, despite my telling you not to use. And Prabhupada said like this, amazingly, Rai Ram started arguing back with Prabhupada. And at the time, Brahmananda Prabhu was sitting outside the room, and he was trying to listen attentively. And Brijan Prabhu also climbed the spiral staircase and he went up to that room and he also tried to hear what's going on inside the room, because such kind of special situations people want to know more, you know, very attentively they want to hear. So then Brahman Prabhu told them, shh, this is only for, you know, big devotees, not for you, you go back, he told them. So of course Brijan Prabhu came down. But in his book, My Glorious Master, Brijan Prabhu is writing. You know what he's saying? He says that, you know, one should never argue against a spiritual master. And he also says, big devotee means one who is fully surrendered to spiritual master. He is a big devotee. and small devotee means an AFA devotee who doesn't know how to fully surrender. Sometimes the devotee tries to manipulate the guru also, sometimes. Manipulate the superiors with which what one wants to do. So one first decides what one wants to do and then tries to bend the superior to say yes to that. You know, somehow they will pull out yes from your mouth. That's what they want ultimately. That's called an AFA devotee. But a superior devotee is one who is unconditional surrender. Unconditionally surrendered. So, but Bhagavan Prabhu got to hear this conversation with Prabhupada. Prabhupada was asking him, so, if you are arguing against your spiritual master, then what can your guru do with you? He asked. And subsequently, Rai Ram, his heart became filled with material desires. And he fell down. He left Krishna consciousness after that. So, there was one very sensible sentence. I'll just read out for you. See here. Even if one thinks, Prabhupada writing, if you want to quote, it is on Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, 19.157. Even if one thinks that there are many pseudo devotees or non-devotees in the Krishna consciousness society, still, one should stick to the society. If one thinks that the society's members are not pure devotees, one can keep direct company with the spiritual master. And if there is any doubt, one should consult the spiritual master. However, unless one follows the spiritual master's instructions concerning the regulative principles in chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord, one cannot become a pure devotee. By one's mental concoctions, one falls down. By associating with non-devotees, one breaks the regulative principles and is thereby lost, he says. So, there is one more here, dealing with superior Vaishnavas. It is also an offense to consider an empowered Vaishnava an object of disciplinary action. It is offensive to try to give him advice or to correct him. The advanced Vaishnava is always situated as a spiritual master, and the neophyte is always considered his disciple. Of course, you know, one can offer suggestions if the guru asks, but one should not argue against the guru. So, of course, in India, because of the culture, people have extra respect for guru, generally. There is now hardly any question of somebody arguing against the guru. But why I spoke about this? Because oftentimes, many devotees are not directly in touch with the guru. How many of you here, you get direct instructions from Guru in your personal life? Can you raise your hand? Some of you maybe. There are a few. There are about 8 devotees, if you see. Yeah. So these devotees will certainly be careful, you know, not to raise their voice against the Guru. But all others, they are likely to be under somebody whom the Guru has chosen and put them under. And then they are dealing with them. So one thing they should learn is, if I am getting shelter of somebody, it is not a wise idea for me to quarrel with that person and go away. You understand, no? Just like your Mataji, if she wanted to quarrel with her husband and leave him, you know, her life wouldn't be glorious. Because the husband, of course, the husband, he is what he is. If she quarreled and went away, then she would suffer more probably. Similarly, if you are in a situation, as we were telling, our interaction with our superiors should be such, not our superiors, even with equals and juniors also, our interaction should be such that we should not allow it to become strained. Okay, in case it becomes strained, what could we do? We should try to repair it. We should surely try to repair it by again going and talking to them. We have to know that we need Vaishnavas to grow. We should never think that, you know, okay, if that devotee behaves to me like this, I don't care. I have so many other devotees. And then you will find we will fight with every devotee. With whoever we come across. That's why the right attitude is, as he says, your success in spiritual life depends on your interactions with devotees. Now, another example Lady gives. Prabhupada is saying here, see one disciple. Prabhupada is writing a letter to one disciple about how to correct the neophyte devotees. I have noted over several complaints against the devotees, but it would be better to set the example rather than to criticize the defects of the devotees. We recruit members from people in general. It is not expected that every one of our members should be immediately to the standard of qualification. The best thing for you is to set the example by your personal behavior and try to refine the others not by criticizing but by friendly behavior. So Prabhupada is saying our interaction with our juniors, I personally have experience. My interaction with some of my juniors sometimes got spoiled because I was too hasty to correct them. When you become too hasty to correct them, many things happen by that. They become threatened, they become fearful. They start seeing us more officially than in a friendly manner. The friendliness will be lost. The smoothness in relation will be lost. And just like for example, the Vrijavasis served Krishna out of love. And then they worshipped the Govardhan here. But then they worshipped Indra out of duty. Is it not true? So which is superior? Performing activities out of love or duty? Out of love, yeah. So maybe Prithu Maharaj was worshipped by the citizens out of love. But if you see Indra is generally worshipped out of duty by the people. You can see that. Or sometimes somebody can get something done out of fear. So that's why I'm saying, when you're correcting any devotees, Prabhu is saying that try to do it by friendly behavior, not by criticizing. Which means criticizing any devotees can stay our relationship with them. Okay, now I will ask a very vital question. In case you have a junior devotee and you deal with the devotee harshly, you may think that, you know, after all, I am senior and this devotee is junior. So I am in a superior position. So what is going to happen? Nothing will happen. And I will go on with my spiritual life. One may think. But such thinking is incorrect. Can you say why? Can a senior devotee, after having criticized a junior devotee strongly for no good reason, or maybe out of false ego, he is called a junior devotee. And he may think that everything is all right. But after all, being a junior, I have the right to dominate. You may think like that. So what is wrong with such attitude? Anybody can say? Yeah. You have the mic here? Yeah. Is this question clear to everyone? Is it not very clear? I'll repeat again. I'll give an example. Indra, for example. You know, he's dominating the Vrijavasis. Because they're dependent on him. Correct, no? Yeah. Now, those who are dominating you, they will be timid and they will be very young, you know. And then I think that even if I dominate them, chastise them, criticize them, what can they do? After all, they are small people. And you may think like that. And my spiritual life will be intact, I'll go on. If somebody thinks, what is flaw in such thinking? That's the question. Yeah?
Actually, Krishna loves every devotee. Krishna loves every devotee. Okay. From our point of view, he may be small, but we don't know.
Okay. What he's saying Krishna loves every devotee. From our point of view, he may be small, but Krishna will not appreciate it. Okay? Prabhu, yes, sir? That superior devotee is turning in relation to the junior devotee, yeah.
So, gradually he will develop the habit of dominating all the subordinate people.
Okay.
And therefore he will, accumulate impurities.
Okay.
And by that his spiritual level will go down.
Yes, his spiritual level will get choked. Choked. Very correct.
So
yeah.
Then he will be treading on the thin ice.
Yeah, correct.
And someday he will fall.
Yes, very good. Thank you. There is a hand up. Hare
Krishna. Our whole process would be to develop an attitude of service or be a servant of the servant.
Very correct.
So the attitude is completely different out here if you are trying to master.
Very correct, yeah. That means, you know, he is losing the vital aspect of spiritual life, which is actually the right attitude. Prabhupada says progress in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower, Prabhupada writes. So he has lost his service attitude, seva bhava. Instead of seva vritti, is bhoga vritti, which is exactly the opposite to bhakti, which means your bhakti will not develop by that. Yeah, what else happens? Yeah?
Prabhuji, this situation may be that right now the person is subordinate to us and we are correcting him, but would we, if every person has a superior, if we are in the same position and if we are being rebuked in the same way, will we be able to accept that in the same spirit?
Yeah, correct. He won't be able to accept, yeah. But he doesn't think like that, unfortunately. You know, if he thinks like that, probably he will develop the service attitude.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah.
It's a consequence of
service. He's unable to think, yeah. One Mataji has a hand up, yeah. Yeah. Yes, Mataji.
Just like to share something regarding this point, is that actually the first thing is that he's missing the point.
Yeah.
And secondly is this one very interesting thing, is that when you try to be somebody, then you will get somebody.
Yeah.
And if you try to be nobody, then you will get nobody.
It's very nice, the play of words, huh? Very powerful meaning. Yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah. I understand. Anybody else want? Yes, Mataji, yeah? Can you give her the mic?
He also has his ways of correcting the devotee.
Yes.
So it's like, Hare Krishna, it's like when Indra was trying to be mean to the Vrajvasis, and then Krishna came into the picture and he corrected Indra.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
So the same way Krishna can correct that devotee in some way. Some punishment from Krishna's side.
That's very true. Thank you. So I was looking for one answer which is very close to what Mataji said just now. That is, you may think he is a junior devotee, but the junior devotees have one very powerful weapon, which is called grievance. So when they will express their grievance, and that grievance will be passed on to people who are even above you, and which will ultimately go to the guru. And then yasya prasada, prasada. Yasya aprasada, yeah, that's what happens. So guru will be displeased with our attitude. He will come to know that this fellow's behavior is bad. He is mishandling his subordinates by lording over them in the mood of a master. Then Guru becomes displeased. When Guru is displeased, he loses his mercy. You see? Which means, we have to please three people. Hari, Guru, Vaishnav. All the three we have to please. We have to please Krishna, we have to please Guru, and we have to please all the Vaishnavas. Whether they be junior, whether they be equal, whether they be senior. Because if you displease senior, you know, naturally news will go about you. And if you displease equals, then they will also complain about you. And if you displease juniors, they will express grievances. So ultimately, we have to endeavor to please all the Vaishnavas. That's why our quality of interaction with all Vaishnavas should be good. See the second statement, reflect on the person you love the most and aspire to treat everyone with that same quality of love. All of you think for a moment, who is the Vaishnava you love the most? Think in your mind. And how you would treat that person? Mostly it's your spiritual master. So you love your spiritual master very much. Now when you treat others, you should think, I should treat them in the same manner as I am treating my guru. In case you meet your guru, how do you speak very sweetly with him? Now that you treat everyone else, he is saying. Very difficult, no? Very difficult. Although it's understandable, it's not very easy to apply. It's a bit difficult to apply. So, but we can endeavor to apply. Thirdly, he says, view all conflicts as your own fault first. Yeah, Parikshit and Samikrishi. You all know, when Parikshit put the snake around Samikrishi's neck, out of thirst, you know, he didn't respond to him. At that time, Parikshit thought actually that the Samikrishi, you know, is he in trance or is he pretending to be in trance? You know, any guest comes to your house, you should at least give a sitting place, give some drinking water, and speak some polite words. And I am king of the world, and a king of the world should be received with great pomp, and he is not even opening his eyes and looking at me, he is just totally neglecting me. Like that I felt at that time. And then in great anger, he just picked up a dead snake and put it on the neck of Samikrishi. And then on the way back, somehow he felt some guilt in his heart. As soon as he reached his palace, you know what he said? He said, maybe that sage was doing some penance. He was in trance. And maybe he committed a big blunder. And then he said, oh Krishna, please take away all my wealth. Let some Brahma shop come upon me. Brahmana shop come upon me. And let me become bereft of all wealth and opulence and everything. And let death come upon me. Like that he prayed. See, this is the amazing thing in Bhagavatam is, at this point of time when he said like this, he was not aware of Sringi's curse. On his own he thought like that. And then Prabhupada writes there, repentance comes in the heart of a good soul, he says. Good soul means a devotee. repentance comes in the heart of a devotee. That means devotee should feel like what Parikshit felt. And there what happened? You know, Sami Krishna was sitting with the snake around his neck and all. And then Shringi gave a curse to, you all know that. Huh? And then when he came to the hermitage, as soon as Shringi saw the snake around his father's neck, you know, immediately he broke into tears. Boom! So then he cried. And then the father opened eyes, hearing someone wailing, crying. And why Shringi cried, there are many reasons for that. One reason is that he saw the snake around his father's neck, how his father is humiliated to see that he is unable to tolerate his crying. Another reason why he is crying is he also felt that I have done some big blunder. You have an experience of this, sometimes we do a mistake and then we cannot contain ourselves. We just break into tears. Like that Shringi also felt, something I have done wrong. Something I didn't tell him that I have done something wrong. And then his father asked him, and the father saw the snake around his neck, dead snake, he took it and just threw it away. And the beauty is, Sami Krishna didn't speak one word about who put the snake around my neck or, you know. And then Shringi told them, and the father asked the son, why are you crying? And he said, my dear father, this Parikshit king came to our hermitage and he only put the snake around your neck. And then it's amazing in Bhagavatam, all of you think for a moment, if somebody put a dead snake around your neck when you are, you know, closing the eyes and chanting, you know, suddenly you open the eyes and see, you found a dead snake, of course a dead snake, fortunately, you know, and then you take it and throw it away. And then you ask everyone who put it, and they tell you the person's name. What will be your attitude towards that person? You say, it's an envious rascal, Who is that? Now I'll call the police now, Is it not true? But Sami Krishna did not say one word about why Parikshit put the snake around my neck. He didn't ask only. But then Shringi said, Father, because he put the snake around your neck, I gave him a curse to die in 7 days. And when he heard that, you know, Sami Krishna became so disheartened. He said, my dear son, what have you done? He said, this fellow is the king of the world. If the king dies, what will happen to the whole world? How will the praja live? The praja is like the lamb. And the thieves and rogues are like the lions and tigers. When the king dies, the thieves and rogues will plunder the society. They will loot the public. They will do all kinds of atrocious activities. And he said, he was not just a king, he was a pure devotee, Parikshit. And such a great soul he was. What a great blunder you have sent without asking me. And then he cursed himself, what kind of training did I give you? That you couldn't control, restrain your senses in such a momentous hour. You behaved like this. He just felt very bad. In fact, he thought, let me immediately go and meet the king, Sami Krishna. But then he felt, if I meet him, he'll feel very ashamed. So he didn't go and meet him. But his attitude was like this. So, what he learned from these three people, all of them felt I am wrong. Shringi felt, I cursed the king, so I am wrong. And Parikshit felt, I put the snake around Sami Krishna's neck, so I am wrong. And why did Sami Krishna feel, I didn't train my son properly, so I am wrong. If the whole world thinks I am wrong, there will be no problem in the world. But the whole problem in the world is everyone says, I am right. The other person is wrong. That is why we need sannyasa, conflict resolution and such kind of things. You know? See, for me, that's what I said here. View all conflicts as your own fault first. Actually, if you read in the 7 habits of highly effective people, Stephen Covey, one of the habits he writes as proactive behavior. This is proactive behavior, actually. These people have copied from all our Vedic literatures. Most of the ideas. Only thing is they take all the ideas, but they don't quote Krishna's name. But they make a lot of money and fill up their pockets. So it is called as proactive behavior. Because don't empower the weakness of the other person by blaming him. For example, I have a personal example in the temple. In the temple there was a lazy devotee. So we all used to tell him, lazy, he's a lazy bum, he sleeps too much and all that. And he actually became even more lazy. Actually he used to sleep 1 hour in the day. After many devotees called him lazy, he started sleeping 2.5-3 hours. And I thought of reversing the situation. So one day I called him to my office and I started glorifying him. I said, you are this, you are that, you have done so many nice things. I encouraged him and he was so happy. He said, Prabhuji, you are the only one encouraging me. Nobody told me such good things. Now I am going to prove what you said. And now he has become such a wonderful devotee. He is no more lazy. So it is said, don't empower the weakness of people by repeatedly blaming them. Don't empower the weakness. On the contrary, what we should do, we should try to encourage them. So what I can do to rectify the situation, don't say what that person can do. And the fourth one, realize that people in your present environment might very well be the people with whom you will live out your life and who are likely to be with you at the time of death. This is a very important point. We should know that the Vaishnavas with whom we are interacting now, they're likely that next 40, 50 years we may be living with them. It's very likely. And imagine when we are dead and our dead body is lying on the bed and all the Vaishnavas are surrounding. There will also be fellows there with whom we had a quarrel. They will be watching the body also. So, when a person dies, what should people do? People should not think like Hindu dead, people thought, Acharya, Maryavi, Gayavi. People feel very nice, isn't it? Should people feel like that, or people should feel, oh, what a wonderful Vaishnava he was. Oh, we are feeling the pangs of separation. Pashane kuti bhramata anamapashaibu. He says, people will hit their head against rock and they will cry. Such a wonderful Vaishnava he was. One should live gloriously and live gloriously also. Like that. So, we need the Vaishnavas to do Harinam Sankirtan for us in case we leave the body before them. And we are going to be lying down. So, we should live a very glorious life. And glorious life means the quality of interaction with Vaishnavas should be good. Because, people will appreciate anyone as a wonderful devotee if the quality of interaction between them is good, correct? If some people have problem with everyone. People sometimes, they are out of station. People think, thank God, this fellow is not here. We are a little peaceful now, People think like that. Otherwise, if the person comes, they think, but immediately you will start all the problems. And people think like that. So, we should not be on that category. And so, he gives four principles of balance. We are only running short of time. So, you can go through that also. And the next notes which you got, the day three, I have simply given how to deal with the different types of devotees. With juniors, with equals, with seniors. Only we didn't get time to discuss on that today. Maybe in some other time in future when I come, and that will take one or two sessions to discuss. But I just gave you the notes, because you can go through it leisurely. But why, in what context I gave you that? Because if we know who is a junior, who is a senior, who is equal, if we can know, and accordingly we can deal with them properly, most of the offenses can be avoided. Otherwise what happens? We don't know exactly how to deal with different devotees. Now, householders who are living at home, they may say that, we are not so much interacting with our devotees all the time. In fact, your interaction with your household members may be more than with other Vaishnavas. So, once I saw my special master telling one couple, he told the husband, she is not your Dasi, she is Krishna Dasi. And then Maharaj told that lady, he is not your Das, he is Krishna Das. So he told both of you should know that first my wife is Krishna Dasi, and then you should think that Krishna has put her under my custody. So the wife should think that the husband is not my servant, he is Krishna's servant. But Krishna has given me my husband. Like that the wife should think like that. And he said, if this is the attitude of both, and one should also remember, and we both have become united, connected in our life by the blessings of our Guru. And that is a sacred vow. We are now married, And if we have a quarrel, that will displease our guru. They should think like that. That is why if some grahastha would go and meet my special master, sometimes he would joke with them, he would ask them, "So, is your family now Vrindavan or Kurukshetra?" And I'd ask like that. You know. And they would say, "Maharaj, now it's Kurukshetra, that's why we have come." You know. You know. So he used to tell, between the couple, there should be divine couple. Then there will be no problem. Because what happens, the divine couple is Radha Krishna. Radha and Krishna, they are like the spiritual lubricant between husband and wife. If the goal is service to Radha and Krishna, then the relationship would be very sweet. So he used to say, the material side of married life is always miserable. The spiritual side of married life is always sweet. It's a very powerful formula. The material side of married life is always miserable. You know, if you try to lead your life materially, try to enjoy, life is full of suffering. But the spiritual side of married life is always sweet. So, in one public lecture, I was amazed, he was telling, he said, before marriage, man and woman, they think, "Oh, the other person is like gulab jamun," he said. And after marriage, they think, "Oh, now they are like Kerala juice." He was telling, you know. And why do they think like that? Because the material side of married life is always miserable. Because the material side, like for example, a man and woman, when they are married, they are very young, very attractive looking, they are attracted to each other's bodies. But another 20, 30, 40 years they spend, you know, they may become fat and they may produce children, they may be sickly. And now the person has to maintain, the wine that they have to maintain, unless they advance spiritually, they cannot appreciate the company of the other person. So beyond 40, 50, husband and wife should see one another as spiritual partners to go back home, back to Godhead. So these principles what we are talking is not only with other devotees. You all experience, when a guest comes to your house, how you treat them? You treat very warmly. "Please come, please sit, please drink this juice, please." And then the members of the family you may treat very harshly. You experience this, isn't it? Yeah. So, these principles are applicable. Once I saw my spiritual master saying that you should know that your family members, if they are devotees, they are also Vaishnavas. You have to treat them with respect. If you offend them, then you will be punished for that also. You see, Suruchi offended Dhruva when he was not even a devotee. But then when Dhruva became devotee, he became such a powerful Mahabharata devotee that the offense that she committed to him took effect later. That her son Uttama died, and then she also died in a forest fire. Vishnu predicted it, that it will happen, he told. So Prabhupada says we should never offend anyone unnecessarily, even if they are very near and dear relatives. Just because somebody is subordinate to us, we can't offend them. Husband, wife, children, mother, father, anybody who is a Vaishnava. In fact, Prabhupada Maharaj was a 5-year-old Vaishnava, isn't it? But Vaishnava should be respected. Even Chatush Kumaras, they look like small children, but in wisdom, they were very powerful. They had the wisdom of old people. So, we should treat them with dignity and respect. Actually, respecting, treating with dignity, appreciating, these things will keep our relationships very, very smooth. Very smooth. Actually, in my life, I saw that, you know, for me, treating my superiors like God is very easy. I come from South India. In South India, the guru and the superiors are treated with respect. So, it was very easy for me. And treating equals also, I treat many of my equals as my superiors. But dealing with subordinates, I have many times seen that sometimes I have a tendency to, you know, deal with them very strongly. So I gave this 3-day seminar only to purify my heart, not to instruct all of you. But if you find anything valuable, you may accept. This 3-day seminar helped me to contemplate myself more. And it helped me to become more thoughtful because we have to become attentive to our behavior. Otherwise, we can never improve the quality of our behavior in our lives. And we all have to see what is our weakness and we have to improve upon it. So these principles of Bhaktiswami, Bhaktiswami are very useful in our dealings with Vaishnavas. If we can have a really, really like a family atmosphere, a sweet relationship between devotees if we apply these principles on an everyday basis. So the third lesson which I gave you, we can go through it leisurely. Some other time when I come in future, we will, if the management they organize a program, then I will speak on the third topic. So now it is already 9. Only I couldn't answer these questions which people asked. So I gave the choice to you. If you want, I can take 10 minutes and quickly answer these questions. Otherwise, I can stop right away. So we'll take a vote. How many of you feel I can go 10 more minutes? Okay, I'll quickly answer the questions. Prabhuji, you mentioned that Rupa Goswami had the visions of the spiritual world. That may be true for him. But sometimes there are ordinary people who come and tell us that Lord Krishna spoke to me in a dream. So what do we answer them? You can ask them, what did Krishna say? And they will tell you. And you can check whether it is in Guru Sadhu Shastra, in line. If it is not, then you can tell them that this is what the Shastras say. You know, like one man told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I came in my dream, he said. Prabhupada said, really? And he said, and you told me that I can smoke cigarettes, no problem. And Prabhupada said, oh, then I didn't come in your dream, it was a ghost. So, you know, like that, you can also check whether it is Guru Sadhu Shastra. Can check. In India, many people say like that. Sometimes I feel that devotees are taking advantage of our niceness. So, how does one react to that? Yeah. So, one thing is we have to keep distance from those devotees who exploit us. Surely. We have to keep distance. Because then otherwise, you know, you will lose faith in Vaishnava Sangha. When you have exploitative devotees. Somebody exploits you for the money. Somebody exploits you because you are a junior, they dominate you. So when you see that, it's not a good thing for you to come across at all, because Vaishnava is selfless by nature. But if you come across selfish so-called Vaishnavas, neophyte Vaishnavas, we should prefer to keep distance. Or in other words, if you cannot keep distance, you are by will of providence put in very close vicinity to them, then you have to become more smart. See, Prabhupada is very shrewd. Prabhupada said a devotee should not cheat others, but a devotee should never get cheated also. Like you know Mr. Price affair? Mr. Price, you know, he tried to cheat devotees. First time a devotee introduced Mr. Price to Prabhupada, he said, Your Excellency, he said. And Prabhupada immediately looked at him. Oh, Your Excellency is calling? Prabhupada suspected him. Prabhupada was very, very shrewd. Prabhupada could understand the person's intentions before he speaks out. Before they complete the question, Prabhupada knows what they are going to ask. So, if you are not shrewd, we have to keep distance. If you are shrewd, you will know. Like you all know Sanatana Goswami, how shrewd he was. When he went to that lodge to stay, the innkeeper was too good to him. He was flattering him. Then Sanatana turned to Ishan and asked him, hey, do you have any gold coins? He said, yes, I have 7. Take it out. He put it on the table. And the innkeeper said, you know, I was planning to murder you tonight and take away these gold coins. Since now that you have given me, I will not kill you, and you can also keep the gold coins, he said. And Sanatana said, I don't want all this, you only keep it. He gave it to him. And then looked at Ishan, hey, why your eyes are appearing to be bewildered? Are you keeping some gold coins with you? I think you have some with you, right? And then Ishan said, I have one with me, you know, he said. And he said, you don't deserve to travel with me, go back. You see, he was a minister also, Sanatana Goswami. So he was very, very politically astute. But if you are not so sure, we may get exploited by some exploiter, so we can keep distance from them. You spoke of Yukta Vairagya. So sometimes to preach, we may have incentives to attract people to Krishna consciousness. Is it called gambling, like lucky draw? To one who chants 64 rounds during Japa Marathon. Actually, I also don't know about this lucky draw. But as far as I know, it should not involve any money. Gambling means, you know, you collect money from everybody and then you keep a prize like, you know, 10,000 or 20,000 something, and then you make a lucky draw and give as people do. But I have seen sometimes devotees doing lucky draw. Like in Tirupati temple, they call about 200 students. And they take a lucky draw from their names. And for the first three lucky draw, they give prizes. So all the 200 fellows make sure they come. Because they think my name may come, you know. Anyway, if it helps in bringing people close to Krishna, it may be all right if it doesn't involve any big money. Generally, gambling means, you know, you take money from everybody and, you know, quick money. If you are working with devotee children and their parents, and we are forced to show them their faults, is it an aparad? You see, if you tell the children, see your parents are eating meat, they are watching TV, they are bad people. So, when they go home and when they tell that my teacher told like this, then the parents may come to pick up a quarrel with you. That's a likelihood. So, my understanding is, we can tell the children what is the right thing. And, you know, what, how the TV, in fact we can make the children write down what are the ill effects of TV. What are the ill effects of meat eating? They themselves will research and find out and bring it. We did that in Pune for a group of children. And they researched in computer and they brought a lot of data. Nowadays they make Google search and they bring. You know, they will bring it for you. So you make them understand it. And then the parents, they will go and show, and then you can tell them, now you made a beautiful chart, you show it to your parents. And they will go and show the parents, like, hey, who made this chart? Is your teacher teaching you? Child says, I only made mom. Then parents are happy, you know. Yeah. No. Parikshit was enlightened and liberated after listening to Bhagavatam. So Arjuna also must have liberated after listening directly from the mouth of Lord Krishna. A liberated person is free from selfish ego and self-conceit. How then can Arjuna become self-conceited when he was assigned the job of escorting the gopis to Mathura? Because of his egoistic thoughts, Lord arranged for his looting by a kaba near Gopi Talav. Yeah. I think probably this is talking about Arjuna carrying the queens of Dwaraka, you know. And when he was taking the queens of Dwaraka, after Krishna left for the spiritual world, there is a pastime that Krishna also withdrew the power of Arjuna. So he was trying to fight off those infidel covered men, you know, with his bow and arrow. But then he couldn't defeat them. They stole. If you know, if you read Bhagavatam, there's explanation given to this. One time there were many apsaras who saw, I think it was Ashtakramuni, I think. He had a twist in different parts of his body in 8 places. So they were giggling and laughing and joking about him. So Ashtakramuni gave them a curse, you know, that you all will be looted by thieves. He gave them a curse. And they all cried. And then they fell at his feet and sought forgiveness. And they said, please kindly forgive us. And then he gave them a boon. He said, you will all become queens of Krishna. That he gave a blessing. What a great blessing it is. And you will be stolen not by ordinary thieves. You will be stolen by Krishna himself, who will come in the form of thieves. And then he will take you back home, back to Godhead. And they all became very pleased. And this pastime is enacted by Krishna later, after he left the spiritual world. So when Arjuna was carrying this queens of Dwaraka, they were looted, they were stolen by the thieves. And the thieves were, who are those thieves? Covered men? They were all covered men. And they were all Krishna only. Krishna came in their form and stole. So, that pastime is done by Krishna for one specific purpose, only. To show the world that, you know, we may be empowered at one time, and we will be disempowered at another time. So Krishna gives some Shakti Pradhan and then he takes away the Shakti also. And we have to know ultimately everything belongs to Krishna. That is one lesson he shows. Arjuna did not become proud even after Krishna left to the spiritual world. He always remained humble. In fact, in all crisis situations he thought of Krishna in the message of Bhagavad Gita also. So the last question. Does the positive and negative karma of one's ancestors affect one's life? So you know, in the pastime of Valmiki, you know, when Narada came across Valmiki's way, Valmiki caught him. And then Narada preach to him. You all know that, isn't it? And then he told that your family members cannot take your sin. Huh? You know, a person steals money to give to family members for their food, clothing, shelter and everything. But then the husband alone suffers for that. That was coming in Bhagavatam. The wife and children will not suffer for that. Narada Muni said that. And then he told her, Valmiki, you go to your home and ask. And he went and asked them. And they all said, you commit sin and why should we share it? They asked. Which means, every jiva carries his own load of karma. Good and bad karma, you are carrying separately. But Prabhupada also says, if somebody commits a sinful activity, the blemish comes on the whole family. They may not suffer any sinful reaction, but some blemish comes on the family, he says. One needs to be adopted and abandoned to become a pure devotee of the Lord. I would request you to read Upadeshamrita, second and third verses. Atyahara Prayasasya was and Utsahanishyat was. Can Vaishnava Prayas be nullified by Vaishnava Seva? Yes. So I'll quote an example and conclude for this question. How Vaishnava Prayas can be nullified by Vaishnava Seva? You know Devananda Pandit, he was a very great Bhagavatam reciter. Very great Bhagavatam speaker. He had worked very hard many years to study Bhagavatam, and hundreds and thousands of people would come to attend his Bhagavatam. He was a popular speaker. And one day Srivas Thakur came to his lecture, and he was sitting behind and attending, hearing Krishna Leela, and he became completely enraptured in ecstatic love. So his body started shivering. He fell on the ground all the eight symptoms manifesting in his body. Ashwasatyuga Vikar. And the disciples of Devananda Pandit saw that, and they thought this fellow is creating a big scene here. So they picked him up and threw him outside the compound. And later on, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Nimai Pandit, he came to the house of Devananda Pandit, and he loudly shouted at him. He said, you are speaking on Bhagavatam, bring me your Bhagavatam, I will tear it into pieces, he said. What's the use of your speaking on Bhagavatam? And Devananda Pandit didn't understand why Mahaprabhu Niyapandit was so angry with him. He just kept mum, silent. He didn't speak anything. And Niyapandit went away. And years later, one Vakreshwar Pandit came to that village. And in the festival, he was dancing beautifully. Vakreshwar Pandit is very famous for dancing. So he was, once he was dancing for 72 hours non-stop. Can you imagine? I don't know how the devotees went for prasadam, I don't know. Or they just finished in between and come back. But at least he didn't eat anything. 72 hours he was continuously dancing. No eating, no sleeping, no drinking water, nothing. And he was dancing very beautifully. And what Devananda Pandit did, he came there and he was like a leader of the Vaishnavas. So he had the Angavastra in his body, and here he took a stick and everything, and he blocked the way of the people. Just like keeping the people away. All of you move aside and allow him to dance beautifully. So he allowed him to dance nicely. At one point of time, dancing like this, he was about to fall on the ground. So immediately Devananda gave his hand and put him on his lap. And Vakreshwar Pandit's body touched the sand. So it became, the body became decorated with the sand. So Devananda took his own clothes and he started wiping the dust from his body. At that time, Nimai Pandit came and saw this sight. And he became so pleased. And Nimai Pandit said, Devananda Pandit, today I am extremely pleased with you for this Vaishnava Seva, which you are doing now. In fact, all of you think for a moment, is there anyone here who finds it difficult to take a towel and dust the body of somebody? Is it a very difficult thing? Even a child can do it. If you tell a child, even a child can do this. It is so easy. So Mahaprabhu appreciated that activity, which is extremely simple to do. But what on the other side of Devananda Pandit? Imagine if any one of us have to become like Devananda Pandit in erudite scholarship. Is it easy? That would have taken years, and even after years, you cannot become a scholar sometimes, even after reading also. So, Mahaprabhu did not glorify even a little bit about Devananda Pandit's qualification as being a great scholar. But he appreciated him for the little Vaishnava Seva he did. And he forgave him also, completely. And his offenses became nullified, whatever he did to Srivas Thakur. He didn't do it directly, but his disciples did. So which means, like, if you have spoken Vaishnava Parad, with our mouth, it's like drinking poison. If you appreciate the devotees and glorify devotees, it is like drinking amrita. Amrita can nullify the poison, what we have eaten before. In the same manner, Vaishnava Ninda is opposite to Vaishnava Seva. So the person whom we envied, the person whom we criticized, if we accept service to that person, do some service, having a humble spirit with a proper attitude, then Krishna will take note. And gradually our wrong attitude towards the person also will change. And then our old offenses will be nullified. Yes, it's true. In the Gita also Mahaprabhu says that. In the Aparadha Bhanjan Leela, he says that if you serve the Vaishnavas whom you offended before, when they heartily forgive you and they become happy with you, they become favorably disposed towards you, finished, all the Aparadha will be finished, he says. So thank you very much for your brilliant questions and your rapt attention. I was telling the organizers that this was one of the best audience I have had in the past so many years. People with sitting at the edge of the seat with great vigor and enthusiasm, a couple of hours non-stop. So I am very thankful. And in the course of my speech, if you feel that I have spoken any examples that were not very shastric or inappropriate, or if any of you felt offended because of the examples I gave, please kindly forgive me. And you can also send a mail to me and rectify my mistake. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. And I also want to thank Brajavali Prabhu, Mukundamada Prabhu, and Bhima Prabhu, Devikananda Prabhu, because of whom I am presenting the seminar here. They have invited me, and I thank them for giving me the opportunity to glorify Krishna and glorify Vaishnavas. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So on behalf of IPP and all the devotees present here, we'd like to thank His Grace Radhishyam Prabhu for coming here tonight for the last 3 days and giving us a wonderful, inspiring lecture, which I think will go a long way in our progress on the path of devotional service. So on behalf of IPP, we'd like to offer some token of appreciation to His Radhishyam Prabhuji, with also the normal token of appreciation by saying, Hare Ma! Hare Ma! Hare Ma! So thank you once again, Radhishyam Prabhu, and we hope that in future also we would be able to listen to your wonderful lectures and get inspired. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you.